This is Talk Is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening.
All right, so I'm sitting here with Nancy Bray, and she is with Eugene, the oft-resurrected.
Yes.
Eugene, Friends of Farm Workers. And we're here to discuss the windmill boycott that's going on right now of boycotting mushrooms that you may find in Market of Choice. But we're going to go over the history of farm worker revolts and boycotts and farm worker support. So let's go back to Cesar Chavez was with the Delano grape boycott. Tell me about that.
Well, sure. Well, the farm worker rights movement, of course, has been going on for decades, but it really geared up in the 60s and 70s, and especially in California. And it grew out of the workers, farm workers' need for better treatment, improved working and living conditions, and higher wages. So in the 60s, there were two farm worker unions in California, the California Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, or AWOC, was formed in 1959, and its members were largely Filipino workers led by Larry Itleon. In 1962, Cesar Chavez, Dolores Huerta, and others founded the National Farm Workers Association, the NFWA, and its members were mainly Chicano Latino. So what happened is on September 8, 1965, over 800 AWOC farm workers walked off their jobs at 10 grape vineyards around Delano, California. On September 16th, the NFWA membership voted overwhelmingly to join forces with AWOC and support their cause. So by September 20th, 1965, there were several thousand workers who had left the fields and were on strike at more than 40 grape farms in Delano. So to support the striking workers, the unions launched an international boycott that lasted 5 years and led to contracts with major grape growers in 1970. So what had begun as a labor dispute in the fields of Delano had blossomed into a civil rights struggle for America's farm workers.
All right, and what's revolutionary about this is these two groups were antagonists, really.
I wouldn't say they were antagonists, but they were different groups.
Right,
they were definitely different groups.
My research is saying the Filipinos tended to be, they were running, using them to run the, they were middle management.
They were actually grape pickers as well as managers. So,
right.
So there were farms in which there were mainly Filipino workers working in other farms where there's mainly Chicano Latino.
But the growers pitted them against one another.
Yes, that is, I would say that would be the case.
And so when they came together.
When they came together, this was it made a very, very strong movement for the first time.
Right, and then the reason they're doing this is the working conditions were terrible.
Yes.
Can you give me some examples?
Long hours, low pay, no bathrooms in the fields. If you were living in a labor camp, terrible housing conditions, and then, no overtime. You're sick a day, you could be fired, you complain, you could be fired.
Definitely no union organizing.
Attempts at union organizing, but had not been successful until this time. And it was successful because these two unions joined together. So AWOC, Larry Itleon, asked Cesar Chavez, would you join us? And as we just said, the NFWA overwhelmingly voted yes. So it made a very strong effort for the first time.
Right, so, and these guys were dealing with pesticides too.
There's definitely.
And, they're calling them the short hose, and
So that would be a short hose, so you have to be bent over in order to hoe. So it was very bad on your back.
Is this, the growers are using this so they can see you working, see you stooped over, is that accurate?
I don't know.
I can't really comment on that.
But yeah,
if nothing else,
historically it was a short hoe. I don't know exactly. I'm sure the research is out there. So what happened then was that in 1967, the two unions merged to form the United Farm Workers Union. and at that they were the UFW organizing committee, and then became affiliated union with the AFL-CIO. So Cesar Chavez became president, and Larry Leung became first vice president. And other vice presidents included Dolores Huerta and Philip Veracruz and a number of other people who were very involved with the strikes at that time.
And then you talked about how they weren't allowed to organize, but in a way, these are more vulnerable workers than industrial workers because a lot of them are immigrant labor, and so
yes.
A lot of them are up here illegally.
Yes.
And they go around with the
right. They're migrants. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're transitory workers too.
That's right.
So it's hard to have a base.
It's very hard. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
That made them extra vulnerable and
yes.
Really necessitated a union.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it took 5 years of the grape strikes. So these workers were on strike for 5 years and an international boycott of grapes to get the growers to finally sign the grape contract. So this was 1970 was a big year because this is when they got the grape growers to sign the first grape contracts. And so at that point, the United Farm Workers initiated a campaign to increase pay and benefits for workers harvesting iceberg lettuce. So this now, and in California and in Arizona, and in an effort to keep the UFW out of the fields, the lettuce growers made secret deals with the Teamsters. So there was a whole nother impact with that.
Mm-hmm.
So in August of 1970, more than 7,000 farm workers responded by launching the largest farm worker walkout in U.S. history. When a Salinas County judge outlawed all strike activities that fall, the UFW began the lettuce boycotts across North America and Europe. So the UFW set up boycott offices in major cities, and in communities like us, we had a volunteer organization. So our organization, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, formed in 1972 to support the lettuce boycott.
And that was an important strategy, though, to have these small, localized
yes.
things, because each,
yes.
each community has a particular crop or whatever that is almost all of them.
I mean, iceberg lettuce is sold across the United States.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, and...
But what I'm getting at is these are local...
groups.
Yeah. Better,
yeah.
But the local groups worked on the local... problems.
Well, on the local sale
yeah.
of items that are being boycotted nationally.
Which was very effective.
Yes, it was very effective, but it takes a lot of people and a lot of time to
mm-hmm.
do this. So our group formed in May of 1972 by local activists, Marion Phelan, who has passed away since then, and Mel Kang, who is still around, lives in Seattle. So that Eugene Springfield-based advocates could support the farm workers' rights movement. And our group included unions, churches, community organizations, local officials, campus groups, that to all join together to support the United Farm Worker organizing and boycott efforts. So on campus, farm worker rights activist Jose Romero, he and Kathy, his wife, are still living in, they're up in Tigard. Very interesting people. I'll tell you more about him in a minute. And also students from Chicano Student Union at Lane Community College and students from the Chicano Affairs Center, MECHA, and the Migrant Labor Project at the University of Oregon were a big part of the boycott effort. And together, all of these groups, churches, unions, formed a strong, active organization that supported the United Farm Workers for 5 years. And what we were doing, starting in 1972, but also then 1973, the UFW announced a secondary boycott of Safeway, because that's one of the largest sellers of non-UFW lettuce. And workers who are covered under the National Labor Relations Act cannot have a secondary boycott. That's where you boycott a business that sells the product you're boycotting. But remember, farm workers were not included under the National Labor Relations Act, so could have a secondary boycott. So the Safeway boycott meant a whole nother level of impact on the growers, because now their products aren't being, you know, the boycott is one thing, to not buy lettuce, but to actually not shop at the store that's selling the lettuce, was a whole increased effort. And at this time also, then those grape contracts that had been signed back in the 60s are now expiring. And when those growers refused to renew the contracts, the grape boycott came back. So at this time, 1973, we have the grape boycott, the lettuce boycott, Safeway boycott. And so what we did was we set up informational picket lines 3 days a week at five Safeway stores in Eugene, Springfield. And we had leaflets, signs, big, what we called a human billboard, so huge signs that you'd be there on the sidewalk. And we sent reports to the United Farm Workers Union on the number of customers who we turned away. And we so we had the weekly picket lines, and then we also had what we'd call a large picket line, solidarity picket lines, in which we would try to get, we would often get more than 100 people to come to those. So in 1974, the UFW ended the Safeway boycott, but began the boycott of Gallo Wines when that company refused to recognize the union. So the UFW continued lettuce and grape boycott efforts and added the boycott of Gallo by picketing grocery stores and the local Gallo distributor.
I was in those picket lines.
Thank you for joining us.
The Teamster Union was opposed to it.
Yeah, exactly.
They used to sit on us.
Yep. I want to just point out a couple of things here real quick. So they were exploiting a loophole with the boycott.
Yes.
That even though they were trying to oppress the workers and not give them bargaining rights, they forgot that they didn't tell them that they couldn't do these boycotts, multiple boycotts. So that's why they did the multiple boycotts.
Well, that's why the unions could do the boycotts.
Right,
the individual workers, they had no power, but the power of the union.
Plan. Yeah. But and then I just want to point out also that these corporations, the Gallo wine, I've got DiGiorno, DiGiorgio or whatever. They were a New York absentee corporation.
Okay.
And so they were much more, again, they were more vulnerable, and that's why they went to the Teamsters. He did a what would you call that? Instead of it's the old Steven Seagal ninja thing where instead of pushing against the union, he just went and got a union.
There we go.
He was using the Teamsters to keep out a legitimate union that would actually.
That's it. That's right.
Do good stuff.
So I mean, the workers were already had voted for and were members of United Farm Workers Union. So to bring in another union,
right? They, 70% had voted for the union.
Right.
Overwhelming support.
Yeah. So some things that we were doing here besides the informational picket lines. We would have solidarity dinners to raise funds for the UFW. We had a food caravan, so collected food for striking farm workers. We showed some different movies, Why We Boycott and Fighting for Our Lives. Yeah. And also what was going on here in Oregon was legislation that would have impaired farm worker organizing in Oregon. And we did a lot of work to try to get those bills not passed, and they were not passed. There were a number of bills that in this time period. So we also hosted UFW Vice President Philip Veracruz here in Eugene. He came four times, and he spoke at large rallies at the U of O and LCC. And then on May 12th, 1974, UFW President Cesar Chavez came to Eugene. And he spoke to an audience of 700 people at Mack Court. And then in 1975, five members of our organization traveled to Modesto, California to participate in the UFW March on Gallo. So we were a very active organization.
Right, and this is an example of what I was saying before, though, that these things are done, rather than trying to do that from a central location in whatever, New York or wherever, Cesar Chavez was at that point, you had these local organizations that had contacts at the UFO and Mecha and things
that's
like
right.
that.
That's right.
And so
that's
why it was very effective.
Yes.
This decentralized style.
Yes.
And this was kind of new, too. I don't think anybody was doing that before.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if it was the biggest consumer boycott, but it was certainly a very, very large consumer boycott.
Huh.
that had not been done before.
And they had been pretty much unorganized up until then, the farm workers.
Right, because they didn't have the right to organize.
Yeah.
So we were also very active on the two campuses. Uh-huh. So in 1972 at LCC, the Chicano Student Union began boycotting the school cafeteria in support of the UFW, and they convinced the school to order only UFW harvested lettuce. So this was a very early victory, 1972. The administration said, okay, we'll only have UFW harvested lettuce in our cafeteria. Well, then the LCC, of course, went back on that agreement in 74, and the group, we had petition signatures and persuaded the LCC board to endorse the UFW's boycott. At this, now it's lettuce and grapes. And then a year later, the LCC board reversed that decision. So at LCC, it kind of went back and forth at yes, no, yes, no. On the U of O, starting in 1972, we worked with a variety of organizations to pressure the student union, the EMU, to purchase only UFW grapes and lettuce. And these groups working on this formed what we called the UFW Solidarity Committee. So that was the campus-based UFW organization. And some things that the group did, gathered 3,000 signatures on a petition to ban the sale of non-UFW lettuce and grapes, and the administration would not honor the petition. There was also a student referendum during the elections in May, and 71% of the students voted only United Farm Worker lettuce and grapes in the UFO, the EMU cafeteria, and the administration would not honor the referendum. So when the president at the time was Robert Clark, and when he rejected the petition and the referendum vote, Mecha, the Chicano Latino Student Union at the University of Oregon, called for a boycott of the EMU food services, and they began selling sandwiches and coffee on the EMU terrace, right there in front of the fishbowl. Uh-huh. The UFW Solidarity Committee and other organizations joined in and operated a boycott restaurant, food table, 5 days a week for over a year. This involved ordering ingredients from a wholesaler, getting a temporary restaurant license, making sandwiches in the early morning, and staffing the food sales table, and then breaking the table down each day. So students supported the effort in large numbers, which caused the EMU to lose thousands of dollars in revenue. And all of that money that was raised at the table was sent to the United Farm Workers Union. So we raised several thousand dollars, which was significant at that time. We're talking about, 1974, 1975.
And you had help from a local kitchen.
Yes. So people went and made sandwiches at Mama's Home Fried Truck Stop, which is now Pegasus Pizza, at 5 in the morning, 5 days a week. They went in and used the equipment there. The restaurant let them use the cheese slicer and all the equipment there to make sandwiches that were sold on the EMU terrace. The U of O tried to shut down the table. They had to have a temporary restaurant license, and the table could only be reserved for a certain number of days, so different organizations had to reserve the table. So Third World Student Coalition, Oregon Council for the Poor, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, so various groups would have to reserve the table. And then, of course, the administration sent the health inspectors, but corrections were made. And so because of being involved in all this, my husband and I have all of these materials. So we have the receipts from the purchase of the ingredients for the sandwiches and the, we have the health department forms, that violation and corrected and all this. We have the copies of the restaurant licenses, and we have posters, flyers, bumper stickers, buttons, flags, a big banner that was on the...
Right, and you got that displayed by a museum here.
Yes, exactly. So all of our materials were displayed in the... Well, they're going to the U of O archives, and we're very happy about that. But we wanted to see the materials displayed. And so Lane County History Museum had our exhibit up from September 2023 until October of 2024. And a lot of people went to see it. In fact, a lot of people who'd never been to the Lane County History Museum went to see it. We had two events during the year, the first in October, and we had over 100 people came. And believe me, there were only 50 chairs. It was very crowded in the museum. And then another in April, which we called our 50th anniversary, Songs and Stories from the UFW Boycott, and we had 70 people came to that. And then we are very connected with PECUN, Oregon Farmworkers Union, which formed in 1985. And so we wanted to do a benefit as part of, in conjunction with our exhibit, a benefit for PECUN. And in this last October, we had a free concert with singer-songwriter Tish Hinojosa from Austin, Texas, who is a longtime supporter of farmworker rights, the UFW, and PECUN. And we also had an art raffle that was organized by local Latina artist Annalie Fuentes. So eight local Latinx artists donated art pieces. So with a free concert, but with a lot of co-sponsors and donations at the door and the art raffle, we raised over $10,000 for PECUN.
Wow.
Yeah, we're very happy with how that came out.
And
so,
did you get to meet Cesar Chavez and Dolores Fuerte?
Okay, so my history is I grew up here. I'm a fourth generation Eugenian. And growing up here, what you did when you were in junior high was you went out and picked beans to make money for school clothes. The growers had old school buses and they would have a route and you'd get on the bus at 7 a.m. and go out and pick beans all day for 2¾ cents a pound, and that's how you got money to buy school clothes. And what I noticed was that there were families out there, and this had a big impact on me. And the families were there, they were picking beans at this extremely low wage. That was for their rent, you know, their food, their clothing. And so, it had a very big impact on me. And so when I was in high school, so this is all in the 60s now, I went out to visit the migrant camps here with a group called the Migrant Ministry. Joanne Arnold is still alive. She is basically me and Joanne. There were three migrant camps that we would go visit outside Eugene once a week. She would bring clothes and books, and I'd organize games for the kids, so I knew where the migrant camps were. So in the summer of 1970, I decided I was going to live in one of those camps, and I did. For the summer, I was hoeing and then picking beans and then cutting onions for seed. And the next year, then I decided I would like to see if I could work as a volunteer for United Farm Workers Union. So the summer of 1971, I was extremely fortunate to actually be placed at the headquarters of the United Farm Workers Union in Delano. And so I met Cesar Chavez. Who I really got to know was Philip Veracruz, who was one of the vice presidents. So 1971 was the summer. UFW had been donated an old TB hospital in Tehachapi, which is east of Bakersfield. So the headquarters moved up to Tehachapi. Delano was a field office. I was assigned to work in the membership office.
Okay, so you didn't meet Dolores Fuerte?
I did not meet Dolores Fuerte.
I thought you had some brush with her.
At that time, yes. And the reason that I didn't meet her was because she and her family were on the boycott in New York City.
Well, but you stayed in her house.
Yes, yes. So her house was housing for UFW volunteers, mm-hmm. like me. So there were a lot of volunteers there at that time in the summer of 1971 because the UFW was building the clinic for farm workers. So the UFW headquarters, 40 acres, when I got there, was the headquarters, the office building, and the gas station. So the UFW had a gas station. And then volunteers were building the clinic, which later, you know, it took a while, but there were a lot of volunteers there at that time. Later, the UFW, the other buildings that are now on that complex, which is a historic site in California, as the Agbayani Retirement Village. So the original Filipino strikers back in 1965 were all men. So because at that time they were not allowed to marry. And so there were no Filipino women there. So anyway, we have these older men now who are retired, but where can they live? So the UFW built a whole retirement village for the original striking Filipino workers. Oh. Yeah.
Well, so the reason I mentioned Dolores Fuerte, though, is that she was instrumental in the housing for these workers is atrocious also.
Well, yes. And
she was instrumental. Yes. Her mother ran a boarding house is how she got into it.
There we go.
Which is similar, though, and she started going out in the field the same way you did.
Yeah.
And saw what was going on and started organizing these
workers. That's right.
The same way you did.
Yes.
So you're right up there.
But
with Dolores
to a much greater extent.
Yeah.
I mean, so Dolores Huerta is still alive. The Dolores Huerta Foundation does incredible work. So how I didn't actually meet her is she came and spoke at least twice here at the U of O. And I think it was probably the second time after she spoke, I went up and introduced myself. I said, you know, I was a volunteer in Delano in 1971. And she said, I think I remember you. And there's no way she remembered me. I didn't meet her then, but I thought, she is an amazing organizer. What do you say to someone who says, I was there? She says, I think I remember you, you know. I was just, anyway, it meant a lot to me that, and so one thing that has happened since then, since 2002, Springfield Public Schools, and which is where I taught for 32 years, so I was involved with this, and Springfield Alliance for Equity and Respect, which is part of Community Alliance of Lane County, have hosted an annual Dolores Huerta Cesar Chavez celebration every April, which is when their birthdays are, to honor these leaders and to recognize those in the community who who exemplify their actions and values. So they give awards every year at this celebration. And it has grown through the years. I was not able to attend the one this April, but the year before there were, I'm sure, 400 people there. So watch for that in April every year.
I remember going through a picket line when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And saying to my mom, you can't be buying these grapes.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember now whether she bought them or not, but because my mom was kind of conservative. But,
this is why I was successful, because, you know, I mean, it was an easy thing to do to not buy grapes or to not buy lettuce. The next step up would be to come out, you know, at a picket line and help out or, you know, talk to a store manager, say, you know, I'd shop here, but, you know, please don't buy this brand of lettuce or this brand of grapes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right, so now fast forward to today, what is going on with the farm workers movement? We still haven't, farm workers are still exploited to this day.
Yes.
And it's very difficult for them to unionize.
Yes.
Especially in Washington, where these mushrooms are coming from, that is the current boycott.
Yes. So farm workers, of course, are still not included under the National Labor Relations Act. There are
two. So they still cannot organize a union.
So there are two states where they can organize. Mm-hmm. They do have the right to organize, and that is California and New York. So in California.
All right, but the employers don't have to acknowledge the union, even in California and New York.
They do, in those two states. So what happened in California was that in 1975, the UFW, well, through the years, the UFW had a lot of marches, Cesar Chavez fasted, picket lines, all kinds of things going on. But in 1975, they organized a 110-mile march on Gallo, and that march ended with 15,000 people rallying in Sacramento. And what that led to was the passage of the California Agricultural Labor Relations Act. And this gave farm workers the right to secret ballot union elections. So what this made possible was that the UFW no longer needed the boycott because this legislation had passed in California. So the UFW ended its grape, lettuce, and wine boycotts. And today, the UFW continues to promote farm worker unionization and legislation to protect farm workers in California and across the United States. So you have to realize that it took 10 years to get this measure passed. The 5 years of the grape strikes and boycott, and then the 5 years of the lettuce, Safeway, and Gala Wine. So the strikes were in the lettuce, but the boycott included Safeway and Gala Wines. And so that finally, then in 1975, this legislation passed. It was rough at first. The growers were, you know, there were, but at this point, farm workers in California do have the right to collective bargaining, and there can the companies have to negotiate if the farm workers have formed a union, and they cannot retaliate against the workers who have joined the union or who complain about the conditions. So in 2019, legislation was passed in New York State. It's the Farm Laborers Fair Labor Practices Act. It was implemented in 2020. And so farm workers now in New York have the right to collective bargaining, no retaliation. However, the New York vegetable growers put an injunction on this that lasted for 6 months. It was lifted. And so just recently, just this winter, the UFW has its first contract in New York with apple pickers. And they have 8 more contracts in the pipeline. And these contracts include all workers, including those workers who are on H-2A temporary visas. So this has been an issue, and I'll tell a little bit more about that. But this is a real victory in New York. However, here in Oregon and in Washington, farm workers do have the right to collective bargaining. But there is no legislation that requires employers to bargain with a union, and there is no consequences if the employers retaliate against pro-union workers or fire workers who complain. So that's what the situation here is in Oregon and in Washington, that we need an Agricultural Workers' Rights Act like they have in California and New York. So what the UFW is working on right now is a boycott of Windmill Farms mushrooms. And I'll tell you some of the history about that. So the company was originally Ostrom Mushroom Farms. And in August of 2022, in Sunnyside, Washington. So in August of 2022, the Washington Attorney General sued Ostrom Mushroom Farms for discrimination based on gender and immigration status. What they did was 85% of the female workers and 79% of the domestic, the Washington-based workers who worked there, were fired or laid off, and they were replaced by male workers with temporary H-2A work visas. And this was just, they fired those work, the female and Washington-based workers in order to show that they had a shortage of workers so that they could bring in temporary visa workers mm-hmm. for lower pay, more hours.
Because that's the only time you can bring in.
Yeah, you have to show you have a shortage, right. So the Washington Attorney General filed a civil rights suit on behalf of the workers who were fired. And it took until, May of 2023 for that suit to settle, and they won. So they got a $3.4 million settlement to resolve this lawsuit, and it asserted unfair, deceptive, and discriminatory actions against the female workers and Washington-based workers. And it said that the company had abused the H-2A visa system by firing those workers in order to show that they had this shortage of work. So that was a big victory. However, I'll tell you some more history that's been going on here. So the lawsuit was filed in August of 2022. In September of 22, The farm workers at Ostrom Mushroom Farm announced that they had voted for unionization. 70% of the workers voted in favor. But the company refused to negotiate. They didn't have to. There's no laws that says they have to. So between November of 2022 and January of 2023, there was continued mistreatment during this lawsuit was going on, and Ostrom retaliated against employees who complained about working conditions, and they refused to hire women. So the Department of Labor and Industries fined Ostrom $4,000 after an inspection that found that the working conditions left the workers susceptible to injuries that could hospitalize them or cause partial disabilities. And there were rallies and marches in Seattle and Yakima about around this time in support of these workers. Then in February of 2023, Ostrom sold to Windmill Farms, which is a Canadian-based firm. And that company, the United Farm Workers, condemns the treatment of workers by this new anti-union management. So what the company offered the workers was new employment at lower wages in less preferable jobs and under an arbitration agreement for any labor disputes. And the workers were required to sign new I-9 forms in an attempt to use documentation status to intimidate workers involved in labor organizing. So this is the point when the United Farm Workers Union stepped in. And UFW President Teresa Romero came to a union rally at Windmill Farms, and they have been involved since that time. So August of 2023, the U.S. Department of Labor, Wage, and Hour Division assesses Windmill Farms $74,000 in penalties for failing to pay its workers the required wage rate and that it did not provide adequate housing that met requirements. So in November of 2023, the UFW and the workers filed a lawsuit against Windmill Farms for violating workers' rights in a retaliatory anti-union campaign of illegal firings, intimidation, and harassment of workers. There were a lot of rallies that's still going on, but from that time through 2024 in Yakima and Seattle, and what this has all led to, so the company is still refusing to negotiate. And so in December of 2024, the UFW announced a boycott of Windmill Farms. And that has been followed by rallies now in Yakima, Seattle, Tacoma, and Spokane. Most recently, in just this April, the Washington Education Association endorsed the UFW boycott. And other endorsements of the boycott to date include the National Farm Worker Ministry. Once we heard about this going on, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, doing this research, we need to let people know about this. So we checked, and these windmill mushrooms are sold here in Eugene, Springfield, and Safeway, Albertsons, and Market of Choice. They're sold in bulk, and this company also does grow organic mushrooms. So you can see the bulk mushrooms may say organic. Check the, please, we're asking people, please check the label on the box. If it's Windmill Farms or if it's Sunnyside Washington mushrooms, please don't buy those mushrooms. Buy another brand. This is the only company in Sunnyside, Washington. So that's why we can say boycott mushrooms from Sunnyside, Washington. So at Albertsons and Safeway, the box was there. You could see the label. At Market of Choice, it was not labeled. I asked the produce manager, he went back to the produce area behind, came back and said, yes, they are windmill mushrooms. So we have a flyer that we put together about this, and we need to add a Market of Choice on here. So there are a number of things that people can do to help. And so first is, please don't buy windmill mushrooms until the company agrees to negotiate a contract with the workers. If check other stores for us, where else are these mushrooms sold? Let us know that. If two or three people would be willing to go talk to a store manager, for example, the produce manager at Market of Choice said, if you bring me information, I will talk to the corporate manager. And we didn't have our leaflet ready then. When I went back a few days later, he wasn't available. I left the information, and I haven't heard back, but I'll go check
and
back
Market
with him.
Market of Choice advertises themselves as a local,
exactly,
socially responsible
exactly.
business.
Yes,
so we want them
yes.
To,
so I
and
think,
I'm sure they will comply if you give them the information.
Yes, they need to, but they need more than just one person going to going to say, please, fill these.
Somebody with an official.
Yes, we need endorsements by unions, churches, and organizations. An endorsement of the boycott official, sending a written endorsement to the United Farm Workers Union.
And thereby telling their
yes,
constituents.
Yes, like the Washington Education Association has done, in the state of Washington. And that's a huge organization. I was a teacher.
But they're telling their members not to buy these
mushrooms. Yes, they're telling their members, yes. So getting the word out.
In addition to announcing their support.
Letters to store managers, as an individual or as an organization. And basically, please help us spread the word. For more information about this, you can go to the United Farm Workers Union website, which is ufw.org/windmill boycott/. And also, for regional information, the Farm Worker Ministry Northwest, and their website is fwm-nw.org. Locally, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, we don't have a website. But I'm happy to give my email if people would like to let me, contact me and say they would like more information. And my email is braynj@gmail.com.
Bray, N as in
Nancy.
Nancy.
And J, my middle initial. So braynj@gmail.
I used to deliver to Yakima, and it's basically, they just grow apples there. It's basically just an agricultural town.
It is,
area.
Yeah,
and,
I have been there,
There's a lot of indigenous people living there too, so I don't know how they are
involved. Would be interesting,
And then I just want to point out to you that this isn't a religious organization that you're, there may be a religious organization involved in this.
The Farm Worker Ministry?
Yeah, but the reason they're doing that is Cesar Chavez famously did a prayer in the middle of the street.
Yes.
That was that in front of the police. And
yes.
And the police allowed him to go through Delano.
Yeah.
Because of his religious.
Yes.
He used the religious to his advantage, as if you really actually followed your religion.
Yes, exactly.
So don't be afraid of these organizations if you're anti-religion. That's, it's not
really. No. Cesar Chavez was a very strong Catholic. Faith-based. And our organization, Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers, we had a number of churches involved. In fact, there was kind of a joke that we had a lot of church women who would come out to our picket lines. And other unions said, how do you get the church women to come out? Well, so for example, the organization Church Women United, very strong here in Eugene, faith-based. So interdenominational, and the Farm Worker Ministry Northwest, or Farm Worker Ministry, again, is interdenominational. So they have an excellent website about, and long years of support for farm worker issues. Mm-hmm. So,
So if you are religious, you might want to get involved in this.
Yes, definitely.
So do boycotts work?
Yes, boycotts work. It's
because a lot of, I get this a lot from, NPR even, too.
Yeah.
That they have these stories where they're saying that boycotts
it doesn't
don't work. That's not my experience at all. It's very effective.
It takes a lot of effort. You have to have endorsement. You have to have a lot of organizations working. This is just my experience. So, the Bigfoot boycott.
Well, so that you don't feel alone out there.
You don't feel alone. So I don't have a lot of information about the Bigfoot boycott, but I supported it and looked into it, and it didn't work. The workers had to go back.
To this day, every time I buy grapes at the grocery store, I still question. I really don't buy grapes at the grocery store. It's almost turned into a
I know.
Involuntary response.
Yes.
Because this happened again, too, in later years.
Yes, right.
There was another grape boy contract.
Exactly, because the grape growers didn't renew the contract, so it came back.
Well, Susan Chavez was still alive.
Yes. So my husband and I don't buy grapes.
To this day?
To this day, no. Mm-hmm. And we also don't buy head lettuce, but we grow our own lettuce, and we, you know, there are, you know, we prefer leaf lettuce and locally grown as opposed to iceberg lettuce grown in California. But yeah, once you become passionate about something, it's hard to not become passionate about it again.
I just want to point out, I know you didn't want to talk about this, but I just want to point out that there's a scene in The Grapes of Wrath, ironically, no pun intended, but in The Grapes of Wrath, they have all the, they're handing out flyers to the Okies and telling them that there's work in California picking fruit.
Yeah.
And then when they get there,
there isn't enough jobs.
And so this has been done in Mexico, though. These workers are here because they've been lured here by these corporations. And I say corporations because these aren't just small family farms, even in the 60s.
Yeah.
These were not just small family
farms. No, we're not talking about boycotting any kind of small family farm or products from a, these are huge corporations.
That are actively working to exploit workers and...
Well, they're getting away with exploiting workers.
And making profits, not by producing a better product, but by exploiting workers.
I just think that Windmill Farms is a real example of a company that is actively exploiting workers. I would hope that other companies are treating their workers better.
I thought Canadians were so progressive up there. Is there a reason that they still... They still have to abide by whatever laws we have here in Washington, even though there are no laws. If they were to change the law here in Washington and allow them to organize,
they would have to respect. I assume so. I'm not a lawyer, but I would assume
so. Well, I wonder, there might be a NAFTA. Yeah. They might be able to take it to the NAFTA court or something.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. Yeah. So I guess the only other piece I could talk about is Oregon farmer. Oregon has its own farmworker union, PECUN, which is Pineros y Campesinos Unidos del Noroeste. My accent is not great, but what it translates to is Northwest Tree Planters and Farmworkers United. And their headquarters are in Woodburn. They formed in 1985. Very active in farmworker rights through these many years. What they're focusing on a lot now is legislation that will benefit farm workers and immigrants. So I'll just say on April 28th, an Oregon lawsuit was filed that seeks to block immigration enforcement at churches, schools, and hospitals. So this lawsuit was filed in federal court in Oregon by Innovation Law Lab and Justice Action Center on behalf of PECUN. So, you know, with Trump, ICE can now go into churches, schools, and health clinics. Mm-hmm. This lawsuit would stop that. So that's going on right now.
Another reason to support the farm workers.
Though, exactly.
They work on immigrant rights.
They have
from the beginning.
Yes. Oh, yes. PECUN is the largest Latinx organization in the state of Oregon. Mm-hmm. So it is a very strong organization in support of farm workers. So they are, there are several bills that they have been lobbying heavily to get passed. HB 3193, Farm Worker Disaster Relief Fund, that protects essential agricultural workers during extreme weather conditions. HB 2976, Indigenous Language Justice. This ensures that Indigenous language speakers can access qualified interpreters because, you know, not all farm workers and immigrants speak Spanish. There are many other languages,
These are migrant workers that are literally sending remittances back to Mexico and things like that.
Yes, so. Some of them, yeah. So through the years...
So there's a reason they don't speak English.
Right, yes.
They still need services.
Yes. But also, you need to know that a lot of migrant workers have now settled. And so there are fewer actual migrant going from place to place, you know, farm to farm, as those who are settled. But this farm work is their livelihood. And And so they need to be protected.
And it might take a little time to learn the language here.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so actually my career in Springfield School District was in English as a second language. I coordinated that program and actually got to design it as a teacher. I was a teacher on special assignment starting in the year 2000 when we started getting a lot of Spanish speakers in Springfield. Mm-hmm. So I can talk about that. But anyway, HB 2543, Universal Representation. This was passed in the Oregon legislature in 2022, and it ensures due process by providing legal representation to immigrants facing deportation or seeking to adjust their status. In its first 2 years, this program helped 10,000 Oregonians maintain stability for their families and employers. What this bill does is it declares an emergency and appropriates money from the general fund. HB 5011, the Home Fund, it provides emergency assistance to immigrant Oregonians to prevent eviction and homelessness. And then SB 611, Food for All Oregonians. It allows youth Oregonians age 6 and under to access food assistance. So, and then, of course, that what has already passed is the farm worker overtime. So that did starting in January 1st of this year, it entitles overtime pay to farm workers after 48 hours of work per week. And it will go to 40 hours per week starting on January 1st, 2027.
Well, so you said in 2000 you were doing the ESL, English as a Second Language. Why did we have more Spanish-speaking people, do you think, in 2000?
Yeah.
What was the cause of the surge?
Well, there were definitely conditions in Mexico and Central America that they needed to come here.
And then these lawsuits, though, too, even if they don't pass, at least they keep the Trump administration on their toes, just like they're doing to us, get them in the courts.
Yes.
And but there's a good chance that these will pass?
I don't know. Keeping fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if people would like more information about PECUN, they should go to their website, PECUN.org. Yeah, our part in this was that we have been Eugene Friends of the Farm Workers. Of course, we were earlier. But those of us in that organization have, of course, supported PECUN. And Herb and I, my husband, knew both Cipriano Ferrell, who was the first president, and Ramon Ramirez, who's the retired president, and now Reyna Lopez is the president of PECUN. So we are very strong supporters of Oregon Farm Worker Union.
Right, just want to throw this out at you. You know, I noticed Cesar Chavez, they had theater during the march to explain to people what the program, what is going on. They used theater.
Right.
We're not doing that here. I don't see anybody doing theater here in Eugene, political theater.
No. Those
were, you had videos. Movies.
Yeah. So what you're talking about is Teatro Campesino.
Right.
Luis Valdez. Yeah. And Teatro Campesino is still active in California, but I've not seen them travel up here recently. But yeah.
We need a theater group here in Eugene, I think.
Yeah, that would be good. Theater is good. Art is good. Exhibits like ours, just to bring attention to these issues, to remind people that, you know, farm workers harvest all the food that we eat. And they need to be respected. They need the rights of all workers to form unions and to have, you know, good working and living conditions.
Well, I don't know if you're, and I'm wrapping this up, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Immokalee workers in tomato workers, but you know, people's argument is that if we paid these workers more money, that our food prices would go up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Immokalee workers, what they did was they doubled the price they paid their tomato pickers. That's how low the price. How low they were paying them.
Mm-hmm.
By just charging one penny more for a chalupa.
Yeah.
It was found that Taco Bell could pay double the amount of money that they pay their workers. So the percentages don't work out. It only takes your labor is only 15% of your profits anyway of your costs in a 10 to 15%. 15% would be like a restaurant.
Yeah.
So to pay your workers more money, that money's going to come back to
the community. Yes, exactly. Yeah, these farm workers pay taxes just like the rest of us do. Yeah.
And in fact, some of them pay taxes and don't use the services. But still, more money going into the services, into the pool, keeps costs down. So ultimately, it may be in the short run, it may be true that the price goes up. But ultimately, in the long run, labor, there's no reason not to pay labor more money.
Yeah.
And that's not capitalism really either.
That's right.
Just cutting labor. Famously, Adam Smith said you need to pay your workers enough to be able to buy their own product.
Yes, exactly. So just to say, when you go shop, if you're buying mushrooms, you have options. This is not the only brand of mushrooms in Safeway. So, maybe you have to pay a little bit more, but please don't buy windmill mushrooms until they're under union contract.
Right, and ideally you go to the farmer's market, but...
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I'll shop at... I used to work grocery and I was in a union, so I will shop at a union store, but... which is why Market of Choice and Whole Foods is not union, I don't think, that I know of. But.
And I haven't gone to Whole Foods to see what mushrooms they sell there, mm-hmm. so...
It's too expensive.
Let me know.
No one can afford to go there.
Yeah.
But that's not because they're paying their workers more money. That's their whole corporate profit margin.